We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
You're listening to Setting the Pace, your go-to Pacers podcast with Alex Golden and Michael Facci.
Sabonis down the lane with authority.
Oh, Miles Turner bringing that smoke.
LaVert skies high for the jam.
Warren lets it fly.
Yes! T.J. Warren is not human.
The Setting the Pace podcast had Kevin Pritchard on.
Well, you got to Setting the Pace, and I think that's terrific.
All right, Facci, what's going on, my man? We are in the play-in game. The Pacers are officially the ninth seed after their win over the Toronto Raptors on Sunday. We're recording this Monday around 5:30, and we've got some injury news updates. But, Facci, before we get into all that, how was your weekend, man?
Weekend was good. Brother had his wedding, so I was the best man at the wedding. Got to give quite the speech, received a lot of, you know, good praise on that. And I was happy to be able to deliver. I don't know about you, been to a bunch of weddings. I've heard some terrible speeches in my time. I would not be that guy.
Yeah, so at my wedding, I didn't make my best man give a speech. I just said, you don't have to do it. And they didn't want to do it. So I just didn't go with one. I would rather not have one than have a bad one, if that makes sense. So they, you know, we had our fun whenever we had the bachelor party and stuff like that. So I just, you know, a speech is not that important to me. But anyway, yeah, I just got back from Michigan today, about 3 hours ago. And I've been working my tail off at home, getting things done, trying to get ready for tomorrow as I go back to work. But here we are, Facci, and we got a lot of things to talk about. So first things first, let's talk about this injury update. Gordon Hayward is officially ruled out for the Charlotte Hornets. It looks like Miles Turner is ruled out. Now, is Jeremy Lamb officially ruled out?
Jeremy Lamb has not been officially ruled out, but it is not looking good. So from what I've heard, Aaron Holiday, Edmund Sumner, Malcolm Brogdon had pretty promising, good workout earlier. But Brogdon is a true game-time decision for tomorrow. Wasn't able to get an update on Lamb.
Yeah, so I would assume that Lamb is out. I think that Aaron Holiday, even if he is available, he will not be in the rotation tomorrow. Yeah. I just don't see that happening. If Sumner's available, I think he very much will be in the rotation because of how guard heavy the Charlotte Hornets are. But I have to ask you a question because you know me. I've always got my tinfoil hat on thinking about conspiracies. We've kind of heard some rumblings that Brogdon is not happy with the coaching change. He's been a game time decision for how many games now? It feels like five or six in a row. Do you think there is I don't want to accuse him of this, but I'm just asking, do you think that there's possibly a little bit of cat and mouse going on here between Brogdon and playing or not playing because of how he feels about Nate Bjorken?
No, I don't. Just because, I mean, I think that they probably made the smart move to be like, hey, look, no one's letting us out of this playing game to the point where let's rest him. And it seems like if he's still a game time decision and there's chances are maybe one, maybe two games left in the year, it feels like in my mind, they're going to put Brogdon out there and hope for the best. And I think at this point, hey, I'm fine with him not playing against, you know, the Torontos and Milwaukee and the Lakers. But I do expect him to be out there. But, hey, crazier things have happened.
So how do you think his return will affect the Pacers? I mean, to me, honestly, like, I would probably agree with you. I don't think it's a conspiracy theory type of thing where he's trying to sit out on purpose. But I'm just curious because, one, I think LeVert's been better with as a single ball handler.
Yes.
With Sabonis. Not having Brogdon hog the ball as much at the top of the key, not hog, but, you know, kind of have the ball in his hands for most of the offensive possession. And two, like, if he was healthier, I mean, healthy enough, I mean, I feel like, wouldn't you want him to come back maybe against Toronto or maybe a comeback against the Lakers just to try to shake some of that rust off before the play-in game?
Yeah, I would have liked that, of course, because, I mean, we could see Brogdon come out there, you know, go 4 of 16, kind of disrupt things a bit. And then it's like, well, what were we really expecting when he hasn't played in, what, you know, close to 2 weeks now? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a tough spot to be in, but I think that is one that you would rather Brogdon be out there if he can than not be out there. I mean, from a guard standpoint, you know, that's Charlotte's strength. So, you know, we got the length of LaMelo Ball, you got Terry Rozier in there. I mean, obviously, even, you know, Devontae Graham. I mean, they got some good guards over there that – why wouldn't you want a defensive guard like Malcolm Brogdon out there? But, yeah, he could be rusty. That's got to be something we probably should expect.
Absolutely. And I'm gonna be curious to see how he does coming back from that injury. It just feels like, you know, this is a guy that really can help this team. And when he has come back from injury earlier in the season, when he sat out a few games, it looks like he's come back pretty healthy and ready to go. But at the same time, he's not been out this long. To me, I don't think he has anyway, all season long. So no. I'll be interested to see how he plays. And then, of course, I'm kind of curious what their starting lineup looks like. And I'm kind of curious on what both teams' starting lineups look like. So if we're just going to play a little game of guessing here, who would you guess would be the starting lineup for both teams?
So I was actually messing around with that a little bit, and it's going to be interesting to see. I think that in like a, you know, a do or die matchup over here, I'm thinking that Justin Holiday is going to be in the starting lineup. I'm thinking of Malcolm Brogdon, Caris LeVert, Justin Holiday, O'Shea Brissett, and Sabonis starting lineup.
That's exactly what I would say because I think defense matters more than anything in the play-in game or in the playoffs period or whatever you want to call this. But I do think that it really does matter. And I don't want to be negative about Doug McDermott, but what he's shown me the last 2 years in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I'm not too excited about seeing him out there for a ton of minutes, especially if they feel like they can get him in one-on-one matchups and attack him in the pick and roll, because that's where I think Justin's a little bit better. But I do think, honestly, having O'Shea out there is a huge upgrade than, you know, what they had before they signed him. I mean, imagine if he wasn't on this team.
No, couldn't imagine.
One, they'd probably be the 10th seed. I don't think they'd be the 9th seed. And that sounds funny, but there's a good possibility they're not even in the 10th seed. There's a possibility that they just fall out because he's been that important to me anyway, just playing that four because he's got the size for it. So I think that this is a good matchup for him, but I do think that he is going to be he's going to have his hands full guarding whoever he has to guard. I think there's a possibility it's Miles Bridges, PJ Washington, but I'm not sure. Looking at Charlotte's team, who do you think is their starting five?
I mean, I think you're obviously going to have LaMelo Ball and Terry Rozier off the bat. Miles Bridges, I would expect to be in there. PJ Washington, I do expect to be in there. Then you're looking at a bit of a wild card scenario. Jalen McDaniels has been getting the starts lately. So I do think it's probably going to be that group, that five right there. But it's hard to fully tell. I'm going to go, if I'm a betting man, I'm going with LaMelo Ball, Terry Rozier, Miles Bridges, Jalen McDaniels, PJ Washington. So not really a tall lineup to say in terms of, like, I don't believe anyone's above 6'9" in that group.
Right.
But at the same point, you know, LaMelo Ball, I mean, one of the lengthiest point guards in the league, listed at 6'7". So you got a lot of guys between LaMelo Ball at 6'7", PJ Washington at 6'7". Jalen McDaniels, I believe, is 6'9". And then Miles Bridges, I want to say 6'6". So it's a decent collection of height. I mean, obviously, outside of Sabonis, the Pacers don't have the tallest lineup. Yeah. So it's definitely going to be interesting. When I was looking at how these teams faced off against each other earlier in the year, the Pacers won the first matchup. They actually played a back-to-back series in the beginning of the year in January. Uh-huh. And then they didn't play for a few months later. It was the Pacers won the first matchup, and Doug McDermott actually was the one that scored 28 points in that win. But then after that, I mean, things didn't go quite as well. But O'Shea Brissett did not play in either of the three games.
Right. So I think that I would agree that they'll probably stick with that same starting lineup. There's part of me that questions if they start Cody Zeller just because of, one, the experience in a critical game, unlike Jalen McDaniels.
Yeah.
He's the longest tenured Hornet. He's been there since he got drafted. So, I mean, he's been there a very long time. And honestly, I could see a scenario where they think that he might match up better guarding Sabonis compared to PJ Washington. But at the same time, if you go back and look at the game that the Hornets won in April when they beat Indiana 114-97, this is the game where the Hornets lost Gordon Hayward for the rest mm-hmm. of the season, it looks like. And honestly, I think they did better when they were smaller. I think being able to drag out Sabonis from the paint, you know, not having Miles Turner in this game could hurt the Pacers quite a bit just for rim protection purposes. But I think that being a little bit smaller, not having the double bigs, is a benefit to Indiana. But at the same time, I can see Charlotte trying to play some matchups where they go quite a bit smaller and really just try to beat this team offensively over, you know, trying to beat them defensively, because I don't know if they have the defensive stoppers to kind of put the clamps down on a Caris LeVert and a Domantas Sabonis.
No, I definitely don't think they do. And, you know, it's interesting. I was looking at that game, the 114-97 loss. In that game, the Pacers had 20 turnovers and let the Hornets get to the free throw line 29 times. Mm. So those are two stats. It's going to be hard to really win any game over there. That was another game that Brogdon missed. So it's going to be interesting. But at the same point, you know, LaMelo Ball didn't play. Gordon Hayward missed half the game, basically. Malik Monk was out. So I don't want to be making excuses there. The Hornets were banged up too. So it's going to be interesting. But when you mentioned the Miles Turner, you know, rim protection, I found an interesting stat basically saying that ESPN, I'll give them a little credit over here, they dug this up. But previously, the Pacers were just outside the NBA's top 10, ranking 11th overall in terms of opponents' points in the paint at 51.1 points per game let up. There's 29th in the NBA over that. The 51.1 points per game let up in the paint was 29th overall, so very good. However, since Miles Turner has went out, that has ballooned to 59.5, which is nearly 5 more points than any other team has allowed.
Wow.
So we went from a middle-of-the-pack defense overall, which we weren't happy with, but an elite rim protection in the paint, to actually pretty much the worst. So it has not been good. Like you said, we are not going to see Miles Turner out there. I don't expect Miles Turner to come back this year. I don't think that this is a matter of him being questionable at any point. He is out. So that's going to be tough. But also another quick, interesting stat. When it comes to playing zone defense, the Pacers ranked 3rd in the NBA. Most zone possessions played on defense, while the Hornets actually led the league in this category. So you were looking at two of the teams that run zone defenses the most. But Alex, what we heard and what we had seen in the past was Toronto's ability to make adjustments almost kind of on the fly. And I'm curious if Bjorkgren has something left in the bag that maybe he hasn't brought out this year.
Well, I mean, if he does, I don't know what he's saving it for, because
I don't know either.
I don't think he does, quite frankly. I think
that bag is empty.
Yeah, I think he's pulled out all the stops to try to get in a playing game. No offense, but what I will say is I think if the Pacers play more than zone for a possession or two at a time, or like, you know, a couple of possessions and then go back to man just to change it up, if they play a zone for 5 to 6 minutes in a quarter, I think that could be the nail in the coffin for this team. Indiana Pacers zone defense is, quite frankly, the worst zone defense I've seen in my entire life.
Brutal.
It is absolutely atrocious. They don't really seem to know what they're doing out there. And without Turner just there to protect the rim if they get inside it, I mean, that's not something I want to risk. And if you look at Charlotte, they're a really good three-point shooting team. if they're able to get out there and get some, you know, some other guards out there, like a Malik Monk, who was really good off the bench this year, who's been coming back from injury. You got Devontae Graham, who is always a wild card. I mean, he can have a big night if he gets hot. Terry Rozier, you mentioned it earlier, he's been fantastic this season. If those guys can get hot from three, along with, you know, you get a couple here and there from PJ Washington and Miles Bridges, I mean, that could be the nail in the coffin for the Indiana Pacers. I think they have to really do a good job of sticking with that man-to-man defensive scheme. And if you're feeling like somebody's getting hot for some reason, as Devontae Graham starts going off early on, maybe you switch to a box and one for a half a second just to try to throw a different look at him. But at the end of the day, I just don't think that this is a game where you can risk playing zone, especially with how bad they've executed it.
Exactly. I think the Pacers had done it. I mean, it's even been credited that when they've switched to man defense recently, it's fared better for them. It just quite frankly has. And I know we talked offline about this, but this Charlotte team is limping into this play-in game.
Yep, yep.
3-7 in the last 10. They've lost 5 straight. So, I mean, this is one of those where Charlotte does not look good. And Alex, for what it's worth, ever since the rock bottom loss to the Sacramento Kings, this Pacers team has played better. And they really have not had many bodies to be throwing out there. I mean, this is a team that they're 5-5 in their last 10. I believe they're 4-3 in their last 7. But this is also a team that they're being competitive. For whatever it's worth, they played the Lakers very competitively the other day. They played Milwaukee, like, I'm not going to say great by any means. They hung around for the lack of bodies that they had. You beat Atlanta recently, and there was a hard-fought overtime loss to Washington by 1 point. Look, we don't want to pat – I'm not in the business of patting ourselves on the back for losses, but there has barely been any starters out there lately. And the Pacers have hung around to the point where, hey, if Charlotte's limping into this game, Alex, I feel weirdly optimistic the Pacers might be able to take this one.
Yeah, you sound like Bob Kravitz over there giving this team a lot of praise for mediocre basketball. I'm just kidding with you. I mean, what I will say, Flotch, and I was wondering this myself, because it's really hard to tell late in the season how tough teams are playing. And the Pacers definitely needed to win. But some of the teams they are playing did not need to win. Like, I get it, the Atlanta game was very impressive. But the win that they had over Philadelphia, we talked about it, I think, on the podcast. Maybe it was me and Jake, I can't remember. But to me, it just felt like – they were not playing their hardest. It felt like the Lakers were kind of just coasting. Same with Milwaukee. Like, they knew they were good enough to beat us when it mattered. I mean, obviously, Sabonis didn't play in the Lakers game, the Bucks game. It was crazy how close it was for how long it was. And the Pacers beating the Sixers was a miracle in itself. But then you go look at the Cavs game. And that's a team that we thought we should have just spanked, and they hung around for a little while. So I'm not really sure what this team is still. And it's bad to say that 72 games later, I'm still unsure of who this Indiana Pacers team
is.
Like,
not alone.
I'm happy that they're looking like they're playing better, but I just don't know if it's fool's gold. Like, you beat the Raptors by 12, they're a crap team. You know, you barely beat the Cavs, you beat them by 8 points. You know, you lost to the Kings, and everything's imploding on May 5th. I mean, it's only been 12 days since then. So 2 weeks to try to right the ship, it's hard to figure them out. And once again, T.J. McConnell comes out to the defense of Nate Bjorkgren yesterday, saying these reports are all false. He's got a family. We're not quitting on him. We're here to play for him. Still, to this day, he is the only single person I have seen back Nate Bjorkgren, from coaches, staff members, in the front office.
It says a lot.
Are you buying it or not? Are you buying it?
I'm not buying it at all. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like the man was begging for someone to just come to his aid. And McConnell is just like, it just feels like McConnell's just such a great guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe given that McConnell's dad was a coach his whole life, maybe he feels the pressure of like, hey, this guy's got a family to feed. Like, come on, like, let's not, you know, it's not all on the coaching. Maybe he could just sympathize on that side of things. But, yeah, it says a lot that other players are not coming to, you know, Bjorkgren's aid. And I don't blame them, though. I don't. But here's basically why I'm relating it back to that rock-bottom loss to the Kings. because I think this Pacers team was truly embarrassed at that point.
Maybe,
I think that was when things got so bad that it was like, hey, guys, like, we're making headlines for all the wrong reasons. And I've seen guys step up. I really have. I mean, Caris LeVert has been such a treat to watch. Sabonis, ever since coming back, has actually been unbelievable. And we've even seen guys like Keelan Martin, who maybe just, I don't know, maybe he just needed more playing time. But Keelan Martin's been playing better. And I don't expect to see Keelan Martin in this game at all against Charlotte. So the real question now becomes, how many men are in this rotation? I went through it, and I think I can count 8, but that includes if Sumner is available, and that includes Goga getting a handful of minutes. Do you see it going past 8, or could it possibly even be 7? 8 feels like the perfect number for me.
All right, so you have Brogdon playing, right?
I got Brogdon playing, so I got Brogdon.
So our only injuries are TJ Warren, Miles Turner, and Jeremy Lamb. Is that what you're going with?
Yeah, and I'm saying that just like we mentioned, if Aaron Holiday is healthy, he's not active.
Okay. But this is tough. I think. Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think I'm going to go 9 if Sumner's available. If Sumner's not available, I'm going 8.
Okay.
And here's why. I don't think you can sit McConnell. I don't think you can sit McDermott. Nope. And I think that you have to have one of Jakar Sampson or Goga Bitadze play backup center minutes. But I personally feel in this situation, you've got to play Goga just a little bit, even if it's just in the first half. You got to play him to get him experience, because if you're going to start O'Shea Brissett, a guy that you picked up off the streets, you know, a young guy you're investing in, I think you have to do the same thing with Goga Bitadze. You have to give him some minutes. So assuming foul trouble is not a problem, I would definitely.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything, which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Do a 9-man rotation, but I think I would probably have Sumner. It's really tough because I think Sumner and Goga probably have the least amount of minutes off the bench.
Without a doubt.
But I just don't know. I mean, if McDermott plays terrible, then you got to consider playing Sumner more. It's just, I think foul trouble is going to be a big thing. But did you have a minutes rotation set up or anything?
No, I really didn't. But here's what I say: I think those starters are playing heavy minutes. I mean, Bjorkman's got to know this. There's a real chance this could be his last game as an NBA head coach, and I think that you can if McConnell. I know, you know, things were different, and there was no Brogdon. McConnell played like 44 minutes a couple games ago. Mm-hmm. I'm imagining that Sabonis is playing, you know, potentially 40, 42 minutes. O'Shea's probably logging, I'd say maybe 37 minutes, like the high 30s. Caris LeVert, I mean, you got to be thinking he's got to be playing 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're really looking at how many minutes do you think you're going to get for Doug McDermott? I'm thinking that could be, you know, 25, 20, you know, right in there.
Yeah, no, I think I would agree with that. For the most part, it's just if he's hitting, I think you play him longer. If he's not shooting well, and you know he's been good on defense actually this year, so I'm not like anti him playing a bunch, but I do think that he's gonna have to figure it out to get a lot of minutes because I'm not sure what's gonna happen here. It's really hard for me to figure this out. I'm trying to do it while we're talking. And I'm struggling just to come up with the minutes. But I do think that there's a chance he does. I think McDermott does probably get close to 25.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it right now. And over the course of the month of May, he's only topped 30 minutes one time. And that was in the Toronto game. So it feels like 25 minutes is kind of what I have in my mind as probably a good amount when you're talking about bringing back, you know, Brogdon, probably Sumner. At mm-hmm. least. So 25 minutes is probably where I see him at. In most of the games in May, he was logging 28 minutes. So it feels natural to trim a couple minutes off if you're bringing in, you know, a couple extra bodies. So that's kind of where I see him at right there, that 25-minute mark. It's Goga that I mentioned before that could be like 6 minutes, you know. Not entirely positive. I don't see it going much more than that, though. Like Goga seems like someone that I cap off at probably 9 minutes. But probably is looking at maybe 6. It's mm-hmm. Sumner that, you know, Sumner could be. I would love if Sumner is like kind of that spark plug difference in this game. I would love that. But you just don't know what you're getting, you know, given his absence. And we talked about earlier before, Brogdon is the question mark. If Brogdon's on, this Pacers team should be able to take care of business against Charlotte. I know you mentioned earlier when Brogdon did have a couple of games off, he looked fully rejuvenated. This injury feels a bit different.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. So here is what I've got, Fudge. It's still hard for me to figure this out because I'm having a brain fart here. But I've got Brogdon and McConnell playing 48 minutes. I've got 28 at point guard for Malcolm, 20 for McConnell at the point guard position. Now when I go to shooting guard, I'm playing LeVert 24 minutes. I'm playing Brogdon 10 minutes at shooting guard. And then I'm going to play Sumner 4 minutes there just to see how he does, if he comes back decent from injury. So then I've got Justin Holiday, and I'm going to play him a total of 15 minutes at the three, and I'm going to play him 15 or 18 minutes at the four. So I'm splitting up his minutes as well, similar to Brogdon's. O'Shea Brissett, I want to play him more than I think I do, but I'm not sure he can handle it. I'm going to give him 25 minutes overall, okay. which would give me about, I think, 10 minutes to LeVert, but he's got to play more than that. So I'm going to have to knock Doug's down to 20 and cut Edmund Sumner's backup minutes out here. So that looks like I'm going to have to give, that's 20 plus 15 is 35. So 13 minutes to LeVert at the three, which would give him a total of 37 minutes. He might have to play more than that too.
I think he's got to be around 40.
Yeah, so that you might just have to cut Sumner out of the rotation then.
That's what I'm saying.
That's where it comes to. Like if you cut Sumner completely out, then I think you give all those minutes to LeVert, then he's got a total of 41 minutes, which makes way more sense. I've got Domas playing 42, Goga playing 6. So
Six, it just feels right for some reason. But that's what I mentioned. I got that 8-man rotation in there, but the minutes for Sumner, that's what's up in the air completely. So the Pacers just put out an injury report about 10 minutes ago while we're recording.
Okay.
They have ruled out Jeremy Lamb. Jeremy Lamb is officially ruled out. Now we have Brogdon questionable, Aaron Holiday questionable, Sabonis questionable, but you get the feeling that he'll be out there, and Edmund Sumner questionable. So I know that doesn't feel promising, but I would like to say that those guys are trending in the right direction. But the fact that they're not willing to say, hey, Sumner and Aaron Holiday or, you know, Brogdon, they're active, makes you really, you know, we're going down to the buzzer. I think we'll find out more tomorrow, you know, hopefully a couple hours in advance. I truly don't hope this is a game time decision where, you know, obviously these players should stay ready. But, you know, at the same point, I would like to know a little bit about who's going to be out there ahead of time. I mean, a guy like O'Shea Brissett, I mean, this is a new stage for him playing in the playoffs. And Sumner, you know, this would be some great run for him. Goga, this would be some great run for him if he can get it. But, you know, hey, there's a mystery going on right now, and I just think that the guys that are going to be available are going to be expected to play 40 minutes.
All right, so you think the Pacers win or lose this game, Fudge?
I think they do. I think they do.
What? I said, do they win or lose?
Oh, win.
Okay. Sorry. I was like, you think they win or lose? He goes, I think they do. I was like,
yeah, that doesn't answer anything.
I was like, okay, that's way to avoid the answer or question there.
Both. Yeah.
Yeah. So I put on Twitter my predictions for the play-in game. I have a feeling Indiana pulls this game out in a very close game. And I think that the only reason I feel that way is because they've just got a little bit more veteran presence that have experienced this. Like, you're talking about a point guard in LaMelo Ball. Like, I really think their future is super bright for LaMelo, but he's coming back from an injury. It's his first time there. If they had Gordon Hayward in this game healthy, my gut would say pick Charlotte.
Just, I agree. I would not feel good about it.
Just because I feel like he's the difference maker for him. Like, this is going to be a good opportunity for Miles Bridges to get some time, PJ Washington. Terry Rozier has been in the playoffs before.
Yeah.
So he has that experience. I think he could be kind of the not the X factor, because I think he's going to be the go-to guy. But I do think Devontae Graham, for me, is their X factor just because of his hot and cold, microwave ability to get off at any time. But he could also go like 2 of 12 from the field easily and just shoot them out of the game. So that's why I think he's the X factor in this whole entire thing. And then for the Pacers, like, what we've been seeing from Caris LeVert and Domantas Sabonis in the month of May and early in the ending the month of April, those two guys have found something special. I just don't want to see Brogdon interfere with that. And that's not necessarily to like knock Brogdon down for any reason. I'm just saying, like, they haven't had to play with him out there for a while. So to me, it feels like if Brogdon can kind of take a back seat, let those two guys do their thing. I mean, look at Sabonis. I mean, the numbers he's putting up is crazy, but like, so willing to pass the ball. I think McConnell had 17 assists yesterday against the Raptors, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it was earlier in the year.
I think it was 15.
15. So that, I'm just saying, like, he's willing to pass the ball.
No, 17. You're right.
Yeah, okay. Like I said, I was on vacation, so everything's a blur. But he had 17 assists yesterday, and O'Shea Brissett went for 30 points. Okay. I just got to stop and say what you want about Kevin Pritchard's drafting ability. The ability to go out there and find a diamond in the rough, you know, a hidden gem, like O'Shea Brissett, and thrust him into the starting lineup of this team. Like, we saw him on 2 10-day contracts that didn't get hardly any minutes. Gets thrust into there because of all the injuries, and now he's like a starter in a play-in game. Like, this is like a Cinderella story type of thing, you know? So I'm excited for what these young guys can do, and I think that with McConnell and Sabonis, these guys are willing passers. They're hopefully not going to try to force too much, and that is my only concern, is that if it becomes a tight game, they get a little tense and start forcing up bad shots, because we've seen it happen several times in playoff games, instead of just being natural and trying to find the open guy. And that's where I think the Pacers could be in trouble if they fall into that trap.
No, of course. The one thing that and you made a great point in touching on that, Charlotte does not have that playoff experience right now. And I'm impressed with what they've done this year. They peaked early. The Gordon Hayward injury obviously was rough. LaMelo Ball missed a large chunk of the season with a wrist injury. They're in good shape moving forward. But just like many teams, it's just not their time yet. And it's not the Pacers' time either, but you have a lot of guys that have been to the playoffs. I mean, your Brogdons, your Sponis, LeVert. I mean, there's a ton of – obviously, T.J. McConnell's played in the playoffs.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a 4-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
McDermott, hey, whether those guys have played well or not in the playoffs is a whole other thing, but you still need to be able to get there. I just think that right now, Charlotte has no answer for Domantas Sabonis. I mean, this man has truly been on fire across the board. I mean, even when he exited the game against Milwaukee, he had 14 assists at basically halftime. You know, he had 13 assists at halftime. I mean, this guy is playing on another level right now, and I just don't think that Charlotte has what it takes to slow him down right now. But I do think a guy like Malcolm Brogdon can slow down LaMelo Ball, can help slow down Terry Rozier. I mean, I'm looking forward to that. And we touched on the two-man game right now of LeVert and Sabonis. I mean, it's special right now. It really is. LeVert has been truly a treat to watch. I can't imagine what this season would have been had the Pacers not made that trade for LeVert and not signed O'Shea Brissett. I mean, we would be looking at a really tough to look at roster right now. I mean, there would not be much here. But in the end, hey, the Pacers did get home court. Is that what you really wanted at 13-23 on the year? But that's obviously the goal. I mean, it's weird to say things like, hey, we would have been better off on the road. And look, guys, if we're already here at this point, you kind of want to win, don't you? I mean, it's one more game, and at least it would be the most meaningful game of the season. At this point, look, we've rooted for them to win. We've rooted for them to lose. I'm rooting for them to win this game.
So what I'll say is if people are wanting this team to tank, like I got called, I put out a tweet yesterday basically just saying what would have to happen for the Pacers to fall to like the 11th draft selection before the draft lottery. And I got told that I'm not a fan because I'm rooting for them to lose. Like, okay, like, can we just stop? Like, I think that fans can have the right to feel however they want to feel. Like, if you're a fan and you want the team to lose so they get a higher draft pick, you're actually thinking about the long-term future of the team. So you're not a fan. I think you're just a realist. And, like, why – to me, it's like, why waste time trying to become the eighth seed so you can get swept by Philadelphia? Like, there's no point. Like, okay, maybe we win a game and feel good about it. But, like, what's the point? Like, it makes more sense to get a higher draft pick and put yourself in a better position long-term and get someone that you think can really help play with this team, impact this team, and get them on a rookie contract. That is where getting a higher draft pick is more important. I mean, I even saw David Benner, the guy that's in charge of PR for the Pacers, like, for all you tankers, you know, haha, we made the play-in game, like, just kind of rubbing it in people's faces, like, okay, like, I don't think anybody was, like, actively thinking the Pacers were going to be, like, a top five pick. No.
No.
They were just like, okay, like, if we're going to be this injury-plagued and we're going to have this many issues with our coaching staff and our front office and whatever, we just got to, like, shut this season down. Like, just get it over with. Like, just – that's what a lot of fans just want. Like, just take me out of my misery type of thing. But I will say this, Foch, for the Pacers to fall to 11th in the NBA draft, they would need Charlotte and San Antonio to make the playoffs as the eighth seed. So because Indiana has a win, one more win than both of them, Charlotte and San Antonio would fall to like 15th or 16th in terms of like draft picking, I think. That's like the lowest they can get if they make the playoffs. Yep. So we would jump all the way up to 11, I believe, if they both make the playoffs, because Memphis, Golden State, LA, Boston, and Washington all have better records than us. So we would be in a better position if that's the case. But at the end of the day, I'm not sitting here saying like I'm rooting for them to win or lose. I just, if they win, cool. If they lose, cool. Like I'm not upset about it because I see both sides of it. And quite frankly, I don't want the team to actively lose just because, you know, like I don't want to see what the Thunder did. I don't want to sit there and watch 25 straight losses.
That would be tough. It would be tough to be invested in every single game and lose that many in a row.
Yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't want to wish that on anyone unless you end up with the number one overall pick. And even in the time being, it's like, look, you'd be looking at your calendar saying, I just got to get through these next couple months.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. So that's where I'm at with everything. I love this Pacers team. I love a lot of guys on this team. And I think that a lot of them, this is a good opportunity for them. So I'm actually just rooting for them to get a good playoff experience and for them to play well. I'm not saying I'm rooting for a win or a loss, and tell me I'm not a Pacers fan if I'm not rooting for a win, but I'm just rooting for a good basketball game, and I want to see growth from our guys in a competitive game. I would love to see Goga maybe get more than 6 minutes and play well in the playoffs. Like, that'd be kind of cool.
It'd be nice.
I'd like to see O'Shea feel comfortable out there, and then I would like to see McDermott do something in the playoffs, because if he does, then, like, that gives you more of a reason to want to bring him back. But if he doesn't, I just say I'm not wasting my money on that. No offense, not wasting, but I'm not going to overspend to keep a guy that I don't feel like I can trust in the playoffs because he's that big of a defensive liability. So this is where I'm at with watching everything, and same with TJ McConnell. Like, he was a liability last year as well. I don't think Charlotte's going to give him that big of a problem, but I do think if you get deeper into it, he definitely will be someone that's a little bit undersized and overmatched. So I want to see how well he plays and if he can hold up to the challenge like he's done all season. So that's where I'm at. And I don't know if you disagree with my logic there, but that's just where I'm at as a fan.
No, I respect it. I'm from the in my situation, this feels like the only game in a long time that's meant something. And I want to see the Pacers come out and respond. And if you win this one more game, it makes me feel like, okay, you know what? Maybe I got my little playoff fix. I know it's not a true playoff game, but I don't want to see this team get slaughtered in a four-game series against the one seed. I don't. So I'm at the point of just give me the win over Charlotte, and I'll be able to say, hey, I knew it was never going to be this year, but we can move on, you know, to next year. So I do want this win, but I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Who has the most to gain out of the upcoming free agents and Goga? So here's the list. We got McConnell, we got McDermott, and we got Goga. If Goga plays great, say he gets the minutes, I don't, whatever happens, and he plays great, do you think he has the most to gain in terms of trading one of the centers, or is it McDermott and McConnell? Because those guys are going to log, you imagine, at least 20 minutes a piece, and they're both free agents. A good game could, you know, spell the end of, you know, whoever doesn't perform as well, and could bring back that, you know, that player. So who do you essentially think has the most to gain out of that group?
Yeah, so when it comes to Goga, I don't really think they should determine whether this game or not impacts if they move on from one of the centers. Like, at the end of the day, clearly they're better with one center. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious with all the numbers that are on the court. Even when they were solo, when they were both playing, when both Turner and Sabonis were healthy, the solo minutes were just better than the double big minutes. It just is what it is, okay? So I don't think that matters, but I do think Goga has a lot to gain from just playoff experience. But when it comes to, like, how the future of the team goes, I would say that it probably means more for McDermott. And here's why, because I think a lot of teams are going to be wanting him. And I think that I think he has the same agent as Joe Harris, who just got a 4-year, $72 million deal, I believe, with the Brooklyn Nets. Okay. Now we know he is the fourth or fifth option on that team, but he's a scorer. Like, he can put the ball in the basket. He's a defensive liability. But at the same time, I mean, if you spread the floor and he's sitting out there, like, you can't leave him, which just opens up so many more lanes. So I think, you know, TJ McConnell, his 3-point shot's gotten better, but I mean, teams are giving him 8 seconds to wind the thing up. Yep. I don't think that really makes that big of a difference. And whatever McConnell does, I think you can get that through games 1 through 82. You don't need to watch it in the play-in game. He's just going to give you heart and scrap and hustle, you know. But I think with McDermott, you want to see him just go off in a playoff game, be super effective offensively, and make teams pay for possibly helping off of him to stop a Domantas Sabonis rolling to the basket or a Caris LeVert putting his head down, going to the basket, and him kicking out to a McDermott three. Like, you almost want to see McDermott have, like, a game 6 or game 4, I believe, Bojan Bogdanović game.
Oh, you know, I love it.
From the Pacers.
Yeah.
It was game three.
I'll never forget it. Oh, man.
Yeah, and, like, he just went off. Like, I'm not saying McDermott needs to do that, but if he could do, like, half of that and just hit some big threes and just really keep this team afloat, like, I think that'll be huge for his payday going forward. But I was going to ask you a question kind of similar to this, because when you were asking me, I wasn't sure which direction you were going. Which team, Indiana or Charlotte, needs this playoff or play-in game win more?
The Pacers need it more. For Charlotte, you can look at them and you could say, hey, yeah, you guys had a cute little run. You know, like, we'll probably see you in the playoffs next year. For the Pacers, they lose this game. I honestly think the masses are going to say, ugh, what happened in Indiana this year? I mean, we were the model of consistency for making the playoffs. This has been a rough year for all Pacer fans, and a loss to Charlotte right now without Gordon Hayward, I think would just say, like, okay, this is just the icing on the cake. You know, fire Bjorkgren, pack it up, do what you got to do, make some changes, let's move on.
So I disagree with you. I think this game means more for the development of the Charlotte Hornets, and here's why. I mentioned it. They don't have any playoff experience. The Pacers do. They need this. I mean, even with Gordon Hayward, they're banking on LaMelo Ball becoming a top 25 player in the NBA at some point, right? Because that's what they really have to bank on. They don't have a lot else to bank on. I mean, Miles Bridges, I guess, is on his way to, like, top – I don't want to say anything.
I don't know. Yeah, we don't want to put a number.
But he has ascended this year from last year.
Yep.
And I put out a tweet to the point where I said I wouldn't even trade Miles Bridges for Miles Turner if I'm the Hornets, just because of how well he's played and the position that he plays. I just think that – he's that important. Like, he's got flaws in his game, don't get me wrong, but he's becoming like my new Aaron Gordon, where I'm falling in love with him. So,
I remember that love affair.
Yeah, so it's a new one, and I'm in love with the different Miles. No surprise there. But I mean, they've got young talent, and I think that they need this playoff experience more than Indiana does. Because look, you said like, oh, they're going to look at Indiana, like what's going on there. I think that that is already out in the open, Foch. The players don't love Bjorkgren. I think that that's a lot to do with it. And a lot of these players aren't happy. And then you can also look at the injury history. We have been derailed by injuries. If you have TJ Warren and a healthy roster for like 75% of the season, we are a 5 or 6 seed, okay? So I don't think people are going to be like, well, in Indiana, I mean, they just suck. You know, they lose Oladipo and they're bad. Like, no, that's not what's going to happen. I think what they're going to say is, look, they fired Nate McMillan. He was a lot better than people gave him credit for. And look what he did with Atlanta. That's going to be the Nate versus Nate comparison, especially if Bjorkman's fired. And I think that they're also just going to say they were derailed with injuries and, you know, they just got, you know, they got hurt at the wrong time. Like, whatever you want to say. I just feel like this game means way more for Charlotte to win it than Indiana because of what I've already said. So I don't want to keep reiterating the points, but you know how I feel.
Yeah, no, I took it from the standpoint of which loss would be more detrimental. And I think that a loss to the Pacers would be more detrimental than it would to the Hornets. But I definitely see your point in a win for the Hornets is something that I think they could – I don't want to make them sound like a sad charity case, but like, I could see them, like, you know, leaping up and down, grabbing each other, like, yeah, like the Hornets are coming, you know, like all this stuff. Where if the Pacers did that, I'd be like, oh, my God, get them off the court. This is getting embarrassing right now. Like, we're not even in the playoffs, you know, so we can't be celebrating. But, you know, for our young Hornets team where you do have – you know, guys like LaMelo Ball, guys like Miles Bridges that are young, I do think it would mean a lot to them. While for the Pacers, I think it's almost like, I think they're probably thinking, ugh, like we have to win this game. While Charlotte can kind of play a little bit of pressure free. And if they win, hey, you know, the future is going to be bright. If they lose, future's still going to be bright.
Yeah, I think there's definitely more pressure on Bjorkgren.
Oh, yeah.
Go out and win this game. I don't think the players, I mean, they care, but they don't at the same time. Like, it doesn't really affect the roster and how it's going to be shaken up if they win this one game, in my opinion, or if they lose this one game. But I think if you're a Charlotte team, you've got to feel pretty confident because they've played pretty well against Indiana all season long.
They have.
They really almost beat New York. They almost beat Washington, who's actually been playing really well of late. They lost some close games to Atlanta, but they were playing well. So I think that Charlotte, you know, maybe I'm underlooking them a little bit because they've lost 5 in a row, but they've had some tough games. Like, I was so mad because, like, the Clippers, they went and, like, tanked the last couple of games so they could try to fall to the 4 seed and avoid the Lakers, who will probably be the 7th seed. Like, why couldn't they have just tanked against Charlotte 3 games prior to the season ending? Like, you know, let Charlotte get that win so we could be the 10th seed and have a higher draft pick. Like, that's what I was thinking. Because I knew we were going to be 9th or 10th. I mean, the odds of us getting 8th with us having to play the Lakers, I knew was pretty impossible, especially once you see LeBron's going to play and Anthony Davis. So
exactly.
That's all I'm saying, Foch. And I'm not trying to be like pessimistic here, anything like that. So if people are taking me the wrong way, I'm trying to think long-term future. That's all. But with this game specifically, I think that Charlotte should have a ton of confidence they can come in here and beat Indiana. I think that they should have confidence they could win 2 games because – they have competed well with Washington, Boston, and Indiana. They've been a pretty decent team. They're 33-39. Their record's not that great, but it's, you know, it's not like awful. And they've been without Gordon Hayward, having to figure that out. Borrego's a good coach. So nothing would surprise me if Charlotte somehow got into the 8th seed, if they happen to play Washington again and win that game. Like, nothing would shock me with Charlotte because I feel like their whole entire team has just been a wild card this entire season.
It has. And I don't remember what their record is with a healthy LaMelo Ball and Gordon Hayward and their ideal starting five. But I do remember them at one point. They were the 4th seed. I mean, they really were. And they held a top 6 seed, you know, for quite some time. It's just towards the end of the season. I mean, they've really been free falling. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. And they had some rough stretches. I mean, they had a stretch in the month of April where they lost 6 of 7. You know, and they've just lost 5 straight. I mean, it's been pretty rough for them. So they held on as long as they could hold on. Just the bottom of the East is not good at all. So, yeah. Hey, do I feel good about this Pacers team beating a very wounded Hornets team? Yeah, I guess, but it does not say much in the end. I mean, we've talked about it. The wins this Pacers team has gotten lately have not been like, okay, I feel like we wrote the ship. Yep, you know, we're going to turn it around. It's like Toronto wanted no part of winning that game. They had no business winning that game. So stuff like that is like, all right, well, you know. So here's what I'll say. I think the team, like I mentioned before, I think they rallied. I don't want to say they rallied around Bjorkgren, but I think they were tired of being embarrassed. Mm-hmm. And I think that Bjorkgren obviously did everything he could, you know, coaching for his job. And, hey, you know what? The team responded. You know, let's see what they got. It could be the last game of the season. So I'll ask you this. Is this the last game you see TJ McConnell and Doug McDermott? Yes or no? If so, who are you going to see in a Pacer uniform again?
No, I think you're going to see one of them, and I think it's going to be TJ McConnell. I think Doug McDermott's going to get paid too much in the offseason.
He's getting paid.
And the Pacers so. Just don't have the financial – they're not in the financial place to go out and get him and pay the luxury tax. Like,
no.
He's a fine player, but he's not worth keeping the luxury tax. Now, if they think that he's that important and they want to keep – like, I think he's been great with Bjorkgren. So, like, if they keep Nate Bjorkgren for another season, which I think is highly unlikely, and then they trade Turner or Sabonis or whoever – for a little bit of salary cap relief, like let's just say they trade him into a team that has a lot of salary cap space, like a team like Charlotte, and you bring on one of the like lower salary players, like we mentioned with Miles Bridges, like I think he's only got like $2 or $3 million on his contract right now. So if you trade him for Turner for this one season, then that would give you the money for this year to pay Doug. I mean, you could maybe see that, but I think McConnell's the more than likely guy to come back with the way that Aaron Holiday has played. You can't trust him as your backup point guard, and point guards are kind of, you know, thin throughout the league. You probably won't find a much better backup point guard, especially for a regular season, in regular season, you know, terms. I think that he just makes a ton of sense, and he is somewhat of a leader in this locker room. I don't think he is the voice that people listen to 24/7, because if he was, then clearly none of this stuff would have got out. It would have been handled differently, but I do think that he does have somewhat of a voice. He's good for the young guys, so yeah, I think McConnell is back, Foch, but I do think that we are going to see one more play-in game. I really do believe that they beat Charlotte in a close game and then lose to Boston. I think Washington upsets Boston tomorrow, and then we got a Boston Pacers game that will go down to the wire, because I don't think they have an answer for Domantas Sabonis, but Brad Stevens did a pretty good job defending him this year as far as scheming to defend him.
No, I very much did, and, you know, the loss of Jaylen Brown, it really changes things. It really does, because let's be honest, this Celtics team underperformed significantly this year, and now you take out Jaylen Brown, who was a very good player this year. You know, shout out to Jaylen Brown. He had a really good year, but all of a sudden, you look at that Boston team, and outside of Tatum, I mean, I'm really not fearing, you know, much, but hey, we don't want to look too far ahead, so we'll have to wait and see what happens. But for tomorrow's game, you know, whenever you're listening to it, Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., TNT, the nation once again gets a chance to witness a Pacer game. And let's see if we respond better this time, because the past few, they haven't been too great.
How many have we lost?
Man, I don't know. Just for some reason, that Milwaukee game sticks out where we were down like 50 points. That's the one that really comes to mind. We lost to the Clippers on national television in what was, I want to say, like a 20-point loss. That was a real bad one. Other than that, man, I'm not sure off the top of my head. Those two definitely stick out.
Yeah, we've been pretty bad in national media or national televised games. I definitely agree with that. And just real quick, I just now saw this message from or tweet from Jay Michael at 4:27 today on Monday. He said, skimming the Pacers Hornets matchup for the play-in, if they can't solve the PJ Washington at the five and Bridges at the four, their season is going to be over. That's a lineup on both ends they failed to solve, even with Sabonis and Turner. He said, he goes on to say, I asked James Borrego about that lineup. He said, PJ at the five has been good for us. It gives us versatility on both sides of the ball when we can protect the paint and still rebound and give them matchup problems on the other side. That's a plus for us. So I think that Charlotte's aware of that. I would not be surprised if they go a little bit smaller. Don't expect Bismack Biyombo to play much at all. Nope. If he does play at all, unless they get in some stupid foul trouble. But I think that You know, we talked about that at the beginning. Just want to bring it back to this. There's a good possibility they do go small. And I guess this is going to be where Sabonis really gets challenged. Having to guard a bigger or a smaller, faster forward slash center in PJ Washington compared to banging in the paint with a guy like Cody Zeller. So someone that could really put, you know, Sabonis in a lot of pick and roll situations, though. I think that you're just going to have to figure this one out, and maybe you have to switch a little bit more than you want to. And you're going to have to hope that O'Shea Brissett is a much better rim protector than he has been without Miles Turner.
Yeah, you know, we might have to send Borrego the tape of that Pacer-Raptors series a few years back, see if maybe Biombo grows on him a bit more so we could, you know, get some of his minutes up. But no, I don't see him playing much this game. Probably maybe could log 5 to 10 minutes or something like that, you know, given what the situation may be foul-wise. But yeah, I do expect to see a healthy dose of P.J. Washington. I do like me some P.J. Washington moving forward. But hey, for tomorrow's game, I'm anti-P.J. at this point, and I'm all Domantas Sabonis. So bring it on.
Absolutely. Well, this wraps up our play-in game preview. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. I know that a lot of fans are still not as present on Twitter as they have been, but if you are listening to this and you haven't already, make sure you check us out at Where Fauci on social media.
So you can find us on Twitter at SettingThePace3. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at _FACCI. And you can find us on Instagram at PacersTalk.
And if you have a Setting the Pace t-shirt that you bought, make sure you have it on for our 6:30 game tomorrow against the Charlotte Hornets. But if you don't have a shirt, didn't get one, make sure you got your Pacers gear on as you're sitting on the couch. Maybe you're at a friend's house. Maybe you're at a restaurant watching the game. Wherever you're at, just remember that there's only three words you can say when you're watching this team.
Let's go, Pacers.